You have tuned in to Open Mic on CJSF Radio, broadcasting on 90.1 FM from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for tuning back in on this very sunny and very warm day. I am Rebecca, and welcome back to my open mic sessions. So, for those of you who don't know me, I am the public affairs intern. I'm from the UK, and I have been featuring on Intravenous for about a month now, and I've been doing my open mic for a couple of weeks. So last week we delved into the topic of immigration and its history in the UK. We were touching upon sort of the Windrush generation, Hungarian Revolution, and sort of the joining and expansion of the European Union leading towards Brexit and the UK leaving the EU. We also were touching briefly about the political situation in the UK since Brexit to what we are seeing today, kind of relating it to the rise of far-right populism that we're seeing again in England and sort of starting to see it throughout Europe too. Of course, last week I also played some music for you guys. It was slightly more British-based than Canadian. So today I have selected a few songs for you that are a bit closer to home for you all with some Vancouver-based artists. So I hope you guys enjoyed the selection. It's a nice like mix of slow and upbeat songs. And today I'm going to be going into a bit more detail in the far-right populism in Europe that we briefly touched upon last week, taking a look at the history of it to what we see like currently, and when I say currently, I mean the past 6 to 8 years, as well as what we're seeing in the past couple of weeks, because there are have been some things that have happened really recently towards it. And I want to take a look at potential implications of it all and whether we're seeing a pattern of events from the past. So definitely stay tuned for all of that that we're going to be getting into. But first, I would like to share with you all a quick song just before we get into it all. So this first song we're going to listen to is by a Vancouver-based artist who was previously she was a folk singer, but she's reintroduced herself as Savvy in 2015, looking more, her music's now more based in the rock genre. And this is off her debut album from 2015, Night Eyes, and it's called Trust the In-Between. And I hope you guys enjoy it.
Breathing deeply, electric air, knowing glances and places.
So welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. I am your host for this next hour, Rebecca. And we are going to talk a bit about some far-right populism in Europe and its history. And that song that you just heard was Trust the In-Between by Savvy, a Vancouver-based artist off her 2015 album Night Eyes. So before we get into the history of far-right populism in Europe, I just want to give a bit of information about what it is for those that maybe don't know. So the far-right is a political ideology, and it is radically conservative, ultra-naturalist, and just authoritarian. And that's just the far-right. When you go into far-right populism, it's combining that political ideology with populist rhetoric such as anti-elitist sentiment, and to put it in more simple terms, it's just an ideology that usually speaks to or for the common people, in quote marks. And it is usually associated to have some really strong links to anti-immigration sentiment, with right populism usually supporting strong controls on immigration and just a lot of anti-immigration values. It's a very almost like patriotic kind of view of like wanting to keep the country how it was before immigration. And far-right populism in Europe is genuinely known for its strong opposition to immigration with its Euroscepticism. So it's Euroscepticism is sort of, it's a criticism of the EU, the European Union. It's a political doctrine that it advocates for the disengagement from the EU in the countries that are involved. And it follows the belief that undocumented immigrants should not receive government benefits. The people that are on this far-right populist side believe that the welfare system should only expand for them, and it should not encompass any undocumented immigrants that come into the country, which is where there is kind of a load of misinformation about. Online you see a lot of like using immigrants as a whole, like that term, when people are talking about more illegal immigrants, and there's a lot of overlap, which has fueled a lot of the violence and the hatred that we're seeing. So taking a look a bit about where it has started, we're going to go through different countries in Europe. Obviously, the EU is a very broad, well, not just the EU, but Europe, it's a very broad spectrum of countries. There's so many. I can't delve into the history of far-right populism in each one, but I can sort of go into what could be classed as the most significant sort of countries that have been involved in seeing maybe a rise in far-right populism, or that they've seen far-right populism a lot more in their history, whether it's come like risen and fallen, and things like that. So we're starting off in the era of 1870 to 1900, so way, way, way back. And we're looking at Germany and France, who are two very prominent European states. And right-wing populism is traced all the way back to this period because of the aftermath of the Franco-Prussian War, which was a conflict between the Second French Empire and the North German Confederation. And because of this conflict, it led to an emergence of two very different trends seen in Germany and France. So bear with me on the pronunciation of some of these terms, but for Germany, I think it's the way you say it is, it was Volkischen, and that was a romantic, nationalist, racialist, anti-Semitic society, and it idealized the bio-mystical original nation. And in France, it was called Boulangism, and that is It was called for a president to be elected by universal suffrage and not through the elected representatives. And this was because the society at the time saw the elected representatives as the corrupted elites. And as we were saying before, the far-right populism is speaking to and for the common people. So to have the corrupted elites, as they called it, to be the people in power making the decisions, that didn't sit right for a lot of people. And then if we're taking a look more in depth in Germany to slightly more recent times, we're looking at how far-right populism was recognized a lot more after the fall of Nazi Germany and the dissolution of the Nazi Party in 1945 after the end of World War II. And there was a denazification that was carried out in Germany by the Allied forces of World War II. And that was for about 4 years, from 1945 to 1949. And this was to eliminate all Nazism with far-right parties only emerging, but they wouldn't last long in the country. They'd only last a couple of years, and then they would disband as well. However, in 1990, Germany reunified to a single sovereign state after the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 that was dividing East and West Germany. And only 1 year after that reunification, Germany was seeing a real rise in violence related to neo-Nazis and the far right. And they were seeing a lot of, I think it was literally 1 year later, there was a neo-Nazi attack on refugee accommodations and migrant workers. And in 1992, there was xenophobic riots breaking out, and there was a consistent trend of hate crimes being seen across East Germany, with people being murdered by far-right groups. Now, if we go back a little bit more towards the 1970s, we're looking more at Denmark and Norway. So in Denmark and Norway, we were seeing an emergence of voters' rejections of the welfare system and the welfare state and the tax system. And alongside this, there was a rise of xenophobia, which, if people don't know, is the term used to describe a dislike of prejudice against people from other countries. So we're seeing this rise of xenophobia from immigration across Europe. And alongside all of this as well, there was the oil crisis of 1973, which was the Organization of the Arab Petroleum Exporting Countries announcing it was implementing a total oil embargo to all countries which supported Israel during the Yom Kippur War in 1973. So you're seeing the end of prosperity post-World War II in Denmark and Norway. Especially, this led to an emergence of two new parties that were considered to be far-right populist, and that is the Progress Party in Denmark and the Anders Lang's party in Norway. And this is all happening sort of a good 20, nearly 30 years after the end of World War II. And then we're jumping again up to 2001, looking at the Netherlands and France. And this was around the time of the 9/11 attacks in the States. So after the 9/11 attacks, there was a new sort of wave of right-wing populism that was exploding up, with a rise of neo-populists, which were nationalist and Islamic phobic politicians, and they were aspiring to be the champions of freedoms for minority groups against the Arab Muslim masses, as it was quoted. And this was a trend that was first embodied by a Dutch political party, and then it was followed by France's National Rally Party, formerly known as the National Front. And this neo-populist transition was going from critiquing the welfare system to critiquing multiculturalism. and their priority was to be the reduction of immigration. And we're seeing that trend today. Still, the neo-populist and the far-right populism, their main focus and their most prominent focus for what they're known for is to be anti-immigration, looking at the focus of controlling immigration and reducing the rates of immigration. And then if we're looking at the early 2000s, so similar time to the 9/11 attacks in Hungary, if you look at Hungary, they have a very deep-rooted history with right-wing populist movements, and it influences politics significantly. And right-wing populism is growing in all the economic and political chaos that was happening in Hungary from the 1990s. So in the early 2000s, I believe you pronounce it the Jobbik Party, they emerged, and they were formerly known as the Movement for a Better Hungary. And they became the most successful far-right political party. They exploited anti-Semitic and anti-Roma feelings to rally support for the party. They were utilizing strong nationalist rhetoric and hostility to capitalism and liberalism. They saw huge popularity and influence because they had such success in using internet channels to attract and mobilize young people. And that strategy of using the internet and using social media has been utilized a lot more in loads of other countries recently to attract young people to support the party by using a form of communication that it's a very prominent part of, I'd say, a young person's life. You look at young people today, we are all on social media, we're all on our phones, we're always connected online somehow. So political parties utilizing that is attracting the younger audiences to support their parties because they're seeing it more, they're being exposed to it more. However, Hungary now has become more about the Fidesz party. They took office in about 2010, and it was changed from a center-right party to a right-wing populist organization. And they stress national sovereignty and anti-immigrant policies, and they're centralized around authority and controlling the media and altering legal frameworks in order to stay in power. Becoming a very controlling and dominant party. And that is sort of the history across a range of countries in regard to far-right populism in Europe. I will talk a bit more on the UK because we saw a transition in the UK probably more before 2016 and up. And it's sort of interlinked with what we're seeing now. So I'll talk a bit about that later on. But I have another song for you all. This second song is by the Quebec artist Joffrey from his latest album released this year, Good Boy. We did hear from this album during my first open mic session with his song Hotel Bed. But this song is called CAYA, which is an acronym for Come As You Are. So I hope you all enjoy.
Heard you pulling back from yet another one. Better keep turning the pages for the story to run. Hope you find your way through the highs and lows. Life is a pot of gold down in my mother's soul. And I'm rooting for you.
Come as you are.
I'm rooting for you.
Don't change a thing.
cold. Count your blessings, love, just your health alone. Might be harder to notice when you're running in circles, but the more you try, the less you know. Nothing to lose, face it.
To listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. That song you just heard was C-A-Y-A, That Can Never Come As You Are, by the Quebec artist Joffrey, off his latest album, Good Boy. And before that, we were just talking a bit about the history behind far-right populism in Europe, across a range of different countries, coming up to around the early 2000s and 2010. We're now going to be talking a bit about what we see in far-right populism now in Europe, probably centering more around the UK and France and Germany, because they are seeing a particular resurgence in far-right populism. So starting us off, I'm going to be talking about the UK, where I'm from. So the right-wing populist party that's currently most prominent in the UK is called Reform UK. And the former right-wing populist party was called the UK Independence Party. UKIP was its sort of what it was known as, and it was most prominent a couple of years up, I want to say 2013, up to the post-Brexit decision in 2016. So UKIP was campaigning mainly for an exit from the EU prior to the decision to have the EU referendum in 2016, and they wanted to implement a points-based immigration system similar to what is seen in Australia. And then after the EU referendum was held in 2016 and the result of it was to leave at a very, very fine margin of 52% to leave, 48% to remain, the UKIP party very quickly transformed, with their leader was this politician called Nigel Farage. And he transformed the UKIP party by leading an initiative to establish a Brexit party. And that Brexit party was then rebranded to Reform UK, which is what we're seeing today. So Reform UK was founded by Nigel Farage, who was the UKIP leader, and Catherine Blakelock in 2018. And post the Brexit referendum, they were advocating for a no-deal Brexit. And Catherine Blakelock was the leader of the party. However, she resigned over some comments that she'd made. And Nigel Farage took over as leader in 2019, up until 2021, to which he then resigned. And it went, the leader became, I believe it's Richard Trice. And that was sort of what it was like up until this year, where Farage then became the leader again in June, right during the campaigning for the UK's general election of this year. And after he was announced as leader again and that he'd be campaigning, there was a sudden strong support for the party. And it was actually the third largest party by popular vote, with 14.3% of the vote. However, if you look at the way Parliament is laid up now, they were the third largest party by popular vote, but they don't have, they only have 5 seats actually in government. So the Liberal Democrats, who were the fourth largest party by popular vote, I believe, they have actually got more seats than Reform UK. And there was a lot of disagreement over that when when the election was going on. And when it was renamed the Reform UK party in 2021, it was pledging to reduce net migration, and it was supporting low taxation. Since Brexit, they were no longer campaigning and pledging for a no-deal Brexit, as Brexit was delivered in 2020. So they then changed to reduce net migration and supporting low taxation. And